I'm trying to stop you.
So we are holding on the beginning of the Gemara, the bottom of Memamud Aleph. To recap, the Mishnah had, it was the old Mishnayos and the Perek, had talked about various details about the Chakiris, about the Chakiris of Bedikas, about the cross-examination of the Eidim. Started off by saying that they have to ask them 7 questions to establish the exact time and place of the thing, according to Yosi 3, and then they go on to other, details such as, did you recognize who the person is? Is it a Yid or a Goy? Did you give Masra? If it was Avodah Zarah, which Avodah Zarah was it, et cetera, et cetera. And then we talked about, the Mishnah had talked about various possibilities if they don't know one of the answers, if they contradict each other in the answers, and then what happens during the rest of the trial.
Right.
Okay, so Gemara starts off, Menahane Mili. Where do we know this concept that you have to have 7 Chakiris? Amar Rav Yehuda, Amakra, because you have 3 Psukim as follows. 1 pasuk in Parshas Re'eh by the Irani Dacha says v'dardashta v'chakarta v'sha'alta heitev. It says you should investigate and you should cross-examine and you should ask carefully. So v'dardashta amounts to one kind of chakira. V'chakarta is another. V'sha'alta heitev. Rashi explains that v'sha'alta by itself, the word v'sha'alta in and of itself wouldn't necessarily mean a cross-examination, but once it's together with the word heitev, which means very well, then it does. Rashi on the pasuk.
Seven.
No, that's only 3 so far. Wait. Rashi on the pasuk explains it a little differently. That Rasha'alta, we learn the Bedikas, the various other side things that we said we asked about in the Mishnah that we asked. Okay, so far you have 3. Okay, according to Rashi on the pasuk, Rasha'alta teaches us Bedikas, which are different than Chakiras. Bedikas are things like the one about the stems of the fig tree or about what color were his clothes, etc. We'll deal with that more in the Gemara. But over here, Rashi learns. Over here, Tosfos doesn't say anything different. Over here, Rashi says that v'sha'alta in and of itself wouldn't necessarily mean chakiris, but since it's paired together with the word heitiv, then it means yes. It means another kind of careful questioning. V'omer. Then you have another pasuk in this week's parsha. In the case of a person worships of a dezara, it says v'hugad l'chava shamaita. It's told to you, and you hear v'darashta heitiv, and you investigate carefully. So those are 2 more expressions v'darashta and heitiv. V'omer. And you have another one also in this week's parsha by Edim Zomim v'doshu asherftim heitiv. The judges should investigate carefully. So you have 7 altogether. So therefore, you have 7 altogether.
Why do you need to say twice?
We're going to see later on in the Gemara. But for right now, the assumption is we have 7 words that therefore teach us the 7 chakir. Okay. The question is, maybe not. Maybe the pasuk doesn't mean that you have to have all 7 of them in each case of din and afashas. Maybe it means that by irani dachas you need 3, by somebody who worships of a desire you need 2, and by edim zemmin you also need 2. Because after all, because after all, you could ask that otherwise, if you meant that you need 7 by all of them, why does the pasuk split them up? 3 in one place, 2 in another, 2 in another. Let him put all 7 of them in one place. And then we'd learn them all, and then we'd learn all cases of binyan afashas from that one. It would be a binyan av from that one. The question is, why it's split. And maybe taka, the fact that it's split, means taka that we only need some of them by each one. Maybe we only need 3 in one case, and 2 in a different case, etc. The answer is kiven dekula bahadi hadodik kiven dekula bahadi hadodik siva. The answer is because all of them are written in a similar vein. All of them use the word drisha. All of them use the word vidarashta or vidoshu. So therefore mehadodi yalfi. Therefore we're able to learn one from the other. It's not even Gzera Shava per se. Gzera Shava we're going to deal with later on in the discussion. Right now we're just saying that since the pasuk uses the Shurdash Dorash by all of them, so it means what does the Jerisha consist of? It consists of all the details that I mentioned in all these various places for a total of 7. Given the Yalfi Mahadadi, Dami. So since we're able to learn them one from the other, so it's the equivalent as if all 7 of them said in each place. So therefore it is the equivalent of as if it said all 7 of them by Irani Dachas and all 7 by a case of a person worships of a desire and all 7 by Edim Zim.
Even though it's said in different places,
because it says the word Vidarashta by all of them, Vidoshu, Vidarashta by all of them, and Drisha is the basis of what we're talking about over here. We're talking about the Chakiras of Drisha. So therefore, it amounts to putting it all together. No, but it doesn't. Once it says v'dorashta or v'dorshu, then that's enough to because it means they all need drisha. And what does the drisha consist of? So in one place it gives some of the details, in others it gives the others, etc. But it's all meant to be combined together.
So what's the difference between drisha and chakira then?
Drisha and
everything is the same.
Because we're saying the word drisha itself is the basic word that means they have to be dorish. They have to investigate the matter and ask the edim for the details, including the details of the time. So once it says chakira is further investigation, but that's we're saying over here we need seven altogether. We learn it from a combination of the words, but because it has the one shodash dorash by all of them, then we can use it to derive one from the other. So the question is, v'holei dam yala hadadi. The question is, how can we learn from each other? The fact of the matter is, each of these three cases has a unique feature that the other two do not. And this, the simon is polat saif hasra. Those are the three key words that represent three features that represent each one of these three cases has a feature that the other two don't. Namely, irani dachas lahanach tauti loydamya. Namely, the irani dachas is not like the other two because shekain mamon and polat. Because in the other two cases of avodah zarah and edim zomim, their money is safe. In the case of irani dachas, not only are the people executed who worship avodah zarah, but also all their property is destroyed and the whole city is burned. You don't have that in the other two cases. So maybe you could argue, therefore, that's fine. When it comes to Edom Zomim, and when it comes to somebody who worshipped avodah zarah, fine, you want to be able to be lenient on them. You want to have the maximum number of judicious v'chakiras in order that the Edom can end up being contradicted and the guy will go free. Maybe by irani dachas, since the Torah is more machmir on them and makes it, therefore, that their property is destroyed as well, maybe the Torah wants to tell us that not. Maybe Taka, you shouldn't have so many chakiras as judicious. Maybe you should only have the three, but by irani dachas, the whole city that worshipped avodah zarah, as opposed to a yachid that worshipped avodah zarah. So maybe Taka, you should only have three. And avodah zarah lahanach tauti ledamya. Further, you can point out that a yachid worshipping avodah zarah is different than the other two. Shekain b'sayif. Because the other two cases involve the penalty of hereg. Namely, irani dachas, the din is that unlike yachidim who worship avodah zarah, Rabim, the irani dachas that worships avodah zarah, they get hereg instead of skila. They go down two levels as far as their misa. And as opposed to a yachid worships avodah zarah, he gets skila, which is more stringent. And when it comes to edim zomim, so Rashi says on the face of it, I mean, edim zomim could be any of the four misas based, and it all depends what they were trying to get to, what they were trying to accuse the guy of. Rashi gives two explanations. One is that first of all, the implication of the pasuk, the fact that after the din of Edom Zomim in this week's parasha, the Torah continues, "V'leisachay se'necha, you shouldn't have rachmanos, nefesh v'nefesh, ayin v'ayin v'goymer." So the implication is we're talking nefesh v'nefesh, that we're talking about the guy, they're accusing the guy of having killed somebody. And in other words, they wanted to get him misasayif, they wanted to get him hereg, and the result is they get hereg. So it's true the same din applies equally well if they were testifying that he was Machal Shabbos or Eved Avodah Zarah or what have you, whatever kind of misa it is. But since the context in the Torah is talking about Hereg, so therefore that's kind of the default, sort of. That's one explanation. Tosfos doesn't like that explanation and prefers Rashi's second explanation, which is, given that among the possible valid misas that Edom Zomim could have, one of them is Saif. So you could argue again that maybe the Torah is trying to be makel on them, given that there's a possibility that they may get a fairly lenient punishment, Saif being the third or fourth of the Mrs. Basin, then therefore maybe the Torah is makel on them and says, in order for that to happen, you have to have a strong judicial v'chakira of the Edom against them. The Edom not want to be mazim them. But maybe you could argue and the same thing you could argue maybe by irani dachas. As opposed to, you could argue by a yachid worshipping avodah zarah, where the punishment is always skila, which is the harshest punishment, or according to Reb Shimon, we'll see soon, the second harshest. Maybe then in that case, along with the harsh punishment, goes the fact you don't need as much Jewish of a Hakira. So maybe therefore, since in that case the Torah only uses two terms, the Darashta Hetiv, maybe all the Pasuk wants to tell us is in that case all you need is the two. And Edom Zomim Lahanach Tauti Ledamya, and furthermore you can point out Edom Zomim are in a certain way dissimilar from the other two, Shekein Tzrich and Hasra, because the other two cases, you need Hasra. A Yachid worship at Avodah Zarah, you need Hasra as usual. Also, you have to first, the Rambam writes based on later on in our Masechta that you have to send two Talmid Chachamim to the city to warn the people to do tshuva, and only if they don't, then you treat it as an Irani Dachas, so they need Hasra first. As opposed to Edim Zomin, do not need Hasra. Why not? Because what is
forewarned, we said.
No, we said we warn them that if you're planning to testify falsely, be aware that other merition was created alone, and be aware that the responsibility of it is going to be on you for generations to come, etc. We never actually warn them in so many words that if you are testifying falsely, you're going to be chayav misa, and they say, yes, we don't care, we're doing it anyway. So why is that? Why taka don't you need by Edim Zemmin? Rashi says because the whole point with Edim Zemmin is Vasisim like Kasha Zomam. We want to do to them like what they plotted to do to the guy who they were testifying against. Well, they didn't actually give him Hasra because it turns out they're lying. They were never there at the time. Therefore, they themselves don't need Hasra. So Edim Zemmin is an exception where a person can be Chayav Misa without Hasra. You don't find that in other cases. So maybe again, therefore, maybe by Edim Zemmin, therefore, the Torah doesn't care if you have as much Drisha Bachakira on the Edim who want to be mazim them, as opposed to the other two cases, maybe Taka the Torah demands all of them. So you can't say. So far, in other words, if you're just going to learn it from the fact, if you're just going to learn it from the fact that the Torah uses the word drisha by all three of them, and you're going to say, therefore, we can learn one from the other, kind of like by a Kav HaChomer, you can slug up, because each one of them has a feature that the other two don't have. Yeah.
Astra is deraisa,
yeah, we're going to talk about it soon.
How do we apply Astra to everything except to Edim Zomin?
Usually, we're going to learn soon. We're going to learn at the bottom of the Amud and the top of the next Amud where we learn the concept of Astra from. So the answer is, no. You're assuming all this time that you're just trying to learn it from you're trying to learn it from kind of a Kav HaChomer or to learn it from because it says Vidoshu in each place, so therefore you're going to assume that the Vidoshu is the same in all places. No, you can't do that based on what we said because each one has a unique feature. However, no, the hate of Yafin and Mahadadi. No, what we're actually doing is we're not using that. We're actually using a real Gzera Shava based on the word hatev, which says in each of these three places. If it's a Gzeira Shava, then it doesn't matter whether one has a feature over the other. Gzeira Shava, that's the way the Torah tells us. It's one of the vidis shatern and dudashas behem. There's no contradicting Gzeira Shava. However, there is contradicting Gzeira Shava, namely.
If we do
the Gzeira Shava, then on the face of it, we can't contradict it. However, with the following caveat. We've learned this concept a few times. Mufne. You have to say, in order for that to work, you have to say that the words that are used for the Gzeira Shava, that the three hated are all available, that we don't otherwise need them to teach us something in the puzzle. Because the rule is like this. If you have, there's actually a machloikas in a few places in Shas. You have like this. The Gzeira Shava involves the same word in two different places, right? Okay, here it's three different places, but whatever, same idea. Normally, a Gzeira Shava involves the same word in two different places, right? There are three possibilities, right? You can have the word is mufne, it's available in one place but not the other. You can have it mufne in both places, or you can have it mufne in neither place.
Okay, and isn't it a machlokes?
There is a machlokes indeed in a few places whether mufne mitzad echad is lemeidin or meshivin. Whether if it's mufne mitzad echad, you're able to make the gzeira shava. However, if you can find a reason to slug it up, like in our example over here, where each of them has a unique feature that the other ones don't have, then that's a valid reason to slug it up and say the gzeira shava shouldn't apply. Okay. Or the other opinion is that no, you can only do that if it's not mufne at all. If it's mufne mishnei tzad, and if it's mufne on both sides, everybody agrees that you can do it, and there's no contradicting.
So you can do what?
That you can do make the Gzeira Shava, and there's no contradicting it. One din is more chomer than the other. Doesn't matter since it's mufne from both sides. That's it. It's a given. The Torah gave it to us.
Mufne, which means
from both sides, that the word is available.
Is
that the word unique. Is not otherwise not unique. No. That it's available. That's not otherwise needed for the sense of for the simple sense of the pasuk or for some other drasha.
Okay. The word is available. It's not being used by another drasha.
Right.
Then you cannot slug up the gzeira.
If it's available from mufne from both sides, you definitely cannot slug it up.
If it's mufne from one side,
then there's a machlokes.
So if whichever rabbi
two sides. Right.
is using the
whichever rabbi is using the one word for another drasha, you can shlug up his derashah. But if someone is not using that word,
That's true.
Indeed.
So fine. Here we don't have a machlokas yet on what hativ means, but we just have to figure out, are the hativs in these three psukim available? The eloi mufne, because if you're going to say that one or another of them is not available, ikal mivrach, then you'd be able to shlug up the kavachomer on the basis of what we just said. That each
what
of these three.
We
need that all of them need to be mufne.
All of them,
because we're doing it here. Usually, when we do a gzeira shava, it's a two-way. It's a two-way thing from one place to another. Here, it's a three-way gzeira shava. We got three psukim involved. One in parshas Re'eh and two in parshas Shoftim. All three have to be mufne. So the answer is loy. Indeed, afnuyim mufne. Yes, indeed, they're all mufne. Loye means indeed. Afnuye mufne. Yes, indeed, it is mufne. Right now, we're focusing on the first hativ, the darashta v'chakarta v'shaalta hativ. The hativ over there is indeed mufne. Midahavale l'michta v'doshu v'chokru. Because the Torah could have just said they should investigate and they should query. V'shoni krov v'dibure v'hativ. Instead, the pasuk writes v'darashta v'chakarta v'shaalta hativ. So the hativ is extra. Shmamina l'afnuye. That means that word is available, is mufne. Okay, the problem is, v'akati mufne mitzad yachadu. Fine, it's only mufne in one of the places. So b'shleima hanach tauti mufne hu. Fine, I can understand when it comes to the two in Parashas Shoftim, the one who worshipped Avodah Zarah, and the Edom Zomim. In those two, you could argue mufne hu. In those cases, you could argue the word mufne is extra, mishum dehavle l'michta. Because in those cases, the Torah could have written v'doshu v'chokru, like it did, instead of writing v'dorshu ha-shoftim hativ, or v'dorashta hativ, it could have written v'dorshu v'chokru instead of using the word hativ. And because, therefore, it uses the word hativ instead, you can say it's mufne in those two places, in the two places in Parashas Shoftim. Ela, Yoni Dachas, my have a mechtev. But what else would it have said by the Yoni Dachas? Hoksiva kulu, awesome. Hoksiva kulu, l'chura, all of them say in the pasuk, v'dorashta v'chokauta and v'sha'alta hativ. So what do you have?
In the two other ones,
it says v'doshu ha-shoftim hativ, or v'dorashta hativ. So there you have it. Instead of saying the word hativ, it could have said v'chokauta, v'chokru. But by the Yoni Dachas, it already says v'chokauta. V'dorashta v'chokauta v'sha'alta hativ. So what is there extra over there? What do you have? What word is there in the pasuk that you could say could have been left out?
In the last one.
In the first, it's the first one chronologically in the Torah. It's in Parashas Re'eh, but yeah. The answer is hosam nami afnuyim mufne. No, even by the Yoni Dachas, you can say that it is mufne, the word hated. Midhavala l'michtav dorosh tidrosh oichakur tachkar. Because the Torah didn't have to write v'dorashto v'chakarta and then v'sha'alta hated. Instead, the Torah could have used the word, instead of using two different verbs, v'dorashto and v'chakarta, the Torah could have said dorosh tidrosh ochakur tachkar, to use the same word in two different verbal forms, the same verb, the same shurish in two different forms.
Then we would say
the Torah didn't have to use the word hativ at all. If it said the choker tachker or dorish tidrash, you wouldn't have the word hativ over there. So there, in other words, the pasuk could have phrased the pasuk in the same way and accomplished the same thing that you need to do derish of a chakira without using the word hativ. So the word hativ is available. Shani krob dibur the hativ. Instead, the Torah chose to phrase it differently and to phrase it in such a way that you use the word hativ. Shmamin alafnuye. Fine. So therefore, there's your mufne. So now all three hativs are mufne, and therefore that's it. Lemaidin vein meshivin. Now you're able to learn this gzeira shava without being able to shlug it up. Each one of the three dinim involved has its own feature. Doesn't matter. Gzeira shava, mufne, gzeira shava. What?
Is
there shava and hativ? That it says hativ in each of these three places.
Hativ means
very well, but it means that the chachira has to be very well, and therefore we apply the v'darashta and the v'chakarta from each one to all the other ones.
So
we have v'darashta.
The
so therefore we got seven. V'darashta v'chakarta v'sha'alta hativ, that's three. V'darashta v'chakarta v'sha'alta hativ, that's three. Then you have v'darashta hativ. And v'doshu ha-shoftim hated. There's your seven. Okay. Now, fine. So now we know. So now we know that that. So now we know that that applies to when it, so we know it applies to two of the four mitzvos based in. We know therefore that that concept of the seven chakiras applies to cases of skila, and it applies to cases of hereg, because those are the two mitzvos that we're talking about. A person who worships of a dezara, a yachid, gets skila. A city that worships of a dezara is hereg. Edim zomin, as we said before, also primarily we're talking about hereg.
For skila,
well, that's what we're going to get to now, but wait. So v'asim nechnokin b'kavachomim in iskolin u'min ha'rogin. Fine. What about chenek? How do we know that when you have a person is on trial for a case that would get him chenek if he's convicted? We can learn that back kavachomer from Niskolin and Neherogin, because no matter what, we have later on in the Masechta, we're going to learn in the seventh parak, we're going to talk about that according to the Chachamim, the order of severity of the Dalet Mitzvos Beis Din is Skila, Srefa, Hereg, Chenek. Then you have, according to Reb Shimon, each
skila is the worst.
Is the worst, according to the Chachamim. Then, according to Reb Shimon, it's actually Srefa, Skila, Chenek, Hereg. So he reverses the position of Skila and Srefa, and he reverses the position of Hereg and Chenek. Everybody then, the point is, Chenek is definitely below Skila. Either Skila is number two and Chenek is number three, according to Reb Shimon, or Skila is number one and Chenek is number four, according to the Chachamim. Either way, Chenek ranks below Skila. So once you know this din by Skila, then you can say the same thing with Kavach Chomer when it comes to Chenek. But also Nisrofen, but Kavach Chomer in Niskalim. What about, how do we know the same concept applies for Srefa? We can learn it by Kavach Chomer from Skila, because Skila is harsher than Srefa. No, because Chenek is definitely below Skila.
So we can say
if you have to do the seven Chakiris when it comes to Skila, which is the most serious, which is the most severe, how much more so you should have to do it by Srefa, which is less severe? How much more so the Torah is being more lenient on the person and giving him a lesser penalty of Srefa rather than Skila? So certainly then the Torah wants you to try harder to exonerate him. By
the opposite. You would have to exonerate him if it does.
But the fact that the Torah is being more lenient with his punishment implies that they, I mean, after all, dead is dead. After all, you know, no matter what, whichever one of the misses based and he gets, he's dead at the end of it. So it's a proper kavachomer within the ways of dying themselves. You can say that if the Torah is giving him a lesser punishment at the end of which he still ends up dead, then it means presumably the Torah wants to be more lenient on him.
And therefore you should
have a kavach chomer. Therefore, how much more so you need the seven chakiras in order to try and schlug up his edim and he can go through. The problem
you
with that.
Say it the other way around also. The
problem with that is hanichal rabbanon da'ami skila chamura. Okay, that works out very well according to the rabbanon who say that skila is the harshest of all the punishments. El Reb Shimon Dama Srefa Chamura. What about according to Reb Shimon who puts Srefa ahead of Skila? Ma'ikal Meimah. Then what are you going to say according to him? According to him, how are you going to get that this concept of Sheva Hakiras applies to Srefa? Maybe say Adrava, since the Torah is more stringent on the person and gives him Srefa, which is according to Reb Shimon the harshest of all the punishments. Therefore, also the Torah is being more strict on him and saying, don't worry so much about the Hakiras. Let there be fewer Hakiras, and the Edim will still sail through the cross examination.
They
pour hot lead down his throat. Yeah, we'll learn about the details of that in the seventh paragraph. Again, when we say that the Chachamim and Reb Shimon argue about the respective severity of the missus, we're not talking about they're not actually hooking up instrument, they're not actually hooking up electrodes to the guy or whatever and measuring his pain response. They're doing it based on what we see. What are the various averus for which the Torah prescribes skila versus srefa versus hereg versus chenek? Which one is more severe than which one is the more severe avera? Yeah. Okay.
Severe in terms of the
how bad an avera is it, basically.
Because the punishment is hard.
No.
Yeah.
Not because of punishment.
No, the other way around. Shimon would say, for example, because we see that the Torah punishes certain averus with srefa as opposed to skila, and those averus presumably are worse averus, therefore the Torah prescribed presumably a harsher punishment for it. So we'll see.
Punishments.
Yeah, right. We learn it from the punishment. We learn this. Yeah. Okay. All right. Ela Omer Rav Yehuda. So note, Rav Yehuda says, never mind the way we were learning it so far, that you just have the seven Lashonis, because the fact of the matter is it doesn't explain Rav Shimon, it doesn't explain straight for according to Rav Shimon. Rather, we can learn it like this. The pasuk also says in two of these places, it says v'hine emes nochin. In the case of Ir Nidachas, and in the case of the person who worshipped Avodah Zarah, it says in each place v'hine emes nochin. It is true and it is established that nochin. We learned before and we'll learn later on Mem Aleph. It means that what the Edom say is compatible. It matches up. So therefore. So you have two more words in each of two places. So besides the seven words, the darashta v'chakarta hetev, v'dorshu hetev, v'dorshu hetev, now you have another four words to work with. Emes nochen, emes nochen. So you're up to 11. Hochadzre. So you have 11 words now. What do we use those 11 words for? Sheva, the sheva hakiris. Seven of them we use to learn the sheva hakiris that we learned in the Mishnah. Dal tlaf v'gzeder shava. Take off another three which you're using that have to be for the Gzeder Shava. And as we said before, it has to be Mufne. All three words have to be available because otherwise we'll slug up the Kavach Omer. So far you're up to 10. Parshal Huchada. You have one of the 11 words left. Lidab Shimon Lasuri Nisrapin. According to Lidab Shimon, you use that 11th word to teach us that the same concept applies to Nisrapin, even though you can't use a Kavach Omer to learn it, unlike the other misses. Nevertheless, you still have it available to teach us that the same thing applies to Nisrapin. L'Rabbanan, whereas according to the Rabbanan, you don't need that because you could have anyway learned it by a Kavach Omer. Fine. Milta da'asib, a Kavach Omer, Tarach l'kasav l'akra. Fine. You find sometimes that even something that could have been learned with a Kavach Omer, nevertheless, the pasuk takes the trouble to write it out more explicitly.
Why?
Sometimes. To be more explicit, we talked about also something that I think, I think from the Bnei Yisachar, who says that after all, Kavach Omer is something that comes from human intelligence. A person puts together a Kavach Omer based on their own intelligence. The Torah wants to remind us every so often that first, the Torah is not the product of your intelligence. It's Chachmas Erosayin, Shalakadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore it sometimes will write something and sort of preempt your Kavach Omer thereby. And mind you, I mean, the Marshal asks the question, usually when we say this expression, Milsa Dasib Kavachim, Tarach Kotzav Lakra, it's usually something that it says explicitly in black and white in the passage. Here you're saying there's one out of 11 words that's available to teach us a concept that you could use for a limud. That's not really the same thing as Tarach Kotzav Lakra. So the Aruch HaNer answer is that, fine, but the fact of the matter is, if it said more explicitly, that's the same thing. Applies to Strafer, for example, yeah. So the Aruch HaNer answers on that. He says what the Gemara means is, after all, we know there's a concept in Einshin Min Adin. You can't give somebody a punishment based on a Kavach Omer. So therefore, fine, the Torah wants to give us a pasuk that you can use for a limud, which you can't slug up that limud in the way that you could slug up a Kavach Omer, and that way it's established even if the Kavach Omer eventually is found to fall apart. For some other reason, you'll still have the limud from the pasuk. And all kinds of Einshin Min Adin. Well, I mean, it's not really in Einshin Min Adin, because we're not really talking about Einish, we're talking about over here cross-examining the Adin, but yeah, okay.
Right.
Fine.
Yeah, but I mean, it's to make an onesh.
Yeah, okay, but it's not the same thing. Ein onshin min adin means you can't say, for example, somebody should be chayv skill or a strafer or what have you on the basis of a kavach omer. Here we're not talking about whether the guy's chayv skill or a strafer. We're talking about the details of how much we have to cross-examine the age. Anyway.
Because you can't murder kavach omer if you jaywalk, you have to do it. That's why, because people like me, ein onshin min adin.
Okay. Fine. So far, so good, except Megadif Barababohu. Rababohu with Megadif on it. We learned earlier in the Masechta, we had at the beginning of the Masechta, we have the same expression. Megadif either means like he made a motion with his hand like this, or Megadif, some of the Mephoshim say, the Goyim, I think, brings up Megadif is an expression meaning like wiping a plate. Like, again, like he made an expression like this, like, what are you talking about?
Get out of here.
Maybe not. Who says that extra word teaches us anything that you could have learned from a Kavach Omer? Maybe it teaches us that there's not seven Hakiris, but rather eight. So we'll ask back, what Shemona Hakiris Miika? How are you going to find eight Hakiris? We had already. We seem to have covered everything in the Mishnah. All the possible details that you could ask as far as the time and the place. I mean, as far as the place, really, we only asked one thing, the Ezim Makim, the Pashtus meaning what city. In theory, the Gemara could have the Tumim or Rabbi Yonasan Adishit talks about, but the Gemara doesn't even take a Hava Amina that you might have to be more specific where in the city. He doesn't get into why, but for Pashtos, the reason is your average city in those days wasn't large enough that you could be Mazim or not Mazim on that basis. It's not like, there wouldn't really be, we're not talking a city like New York. So we just said the Ezim Makim, you ask what city, and the answer is, the answer is, Kfachabad, fast or whatever. It's not a big enough city that you couldn't be within half an hour. You'd be from one end of the city to the other. But so the Gemara is assuming, though, the Makshin is assuming, that also as far as the time. We have six questions as far as the time, where we seem to have covered everything. Be'ez a Shavua, which Shmita was in the Yovel, Be'ez a Shana, which year in the Shmita, Be'ez a Chodesh, Be'kam of a Chodesh, Be'ez a Yom, Be'ez a Shah. We seem to have drilled down pretty well to the time. So what is there even, so what is there about Havah? I mean, that there should be anything else to ask. And the Gemara answers right back. The Gemara asks right back. No, we said which Shmita in the Yovel? Which Shmita in the Yovel? Was it the first, second?
So in case you're living 1,000 years, which Yovel?
Yes. So the question, so the Gemara answers right back. Alam Aloy, why not? What's your problem with thinking that you could have an eighth one? Well, you could last to kind of a Shah. Yes, you could add an eighth one. You could ask like this. The Mishnah mentioned Bekama Shoy, what hour of the day? Was it the second hour in the morning, the third, whatever? You could go within the hour itself. Was it 8:30? Was it 8:45? Whatever. Okay, so it's interesting actually. Rabbi Yonasan Agashitz also in the Tumim on Shulchan Aruch gets into a very long discussion about this. Because he says, after all, it's not like the whole concept that there are 12 hours in a day and 12 in a night is not something, it's not a natural division of time. It's the whoever it was, the ancient Babylonians or whatever, whoever came up with the idea. Who says that, why should we think, in other words, if you're asking the Adim, let's say, was it between 8 and 9, why should we think to drill down more finely and ask, was it between 8 and 8:30 or whatever? So he says that actually maybe what the Gemara means over here is that maybe midaraisa, all you'd have to ask them is, was it in the morning or the afternoon? Where there's an obvious difference, as the Mishnah said. In the morning, the sun is in the east, and in the afternoon, the sun is in the west. And then the Gemara's Havamin is that maybe you should drill down more narrowly within that. Was it in the first hour of the morning, the second hour, etc.?
Well, we have this whole thing about if I say it's 9 a.m. and he says it's 11 a.m.
Ah, that's what we're going to get into now. V'tanya namimchachi, and in fact, we learn in a b'raisa how you both kenosi b'shmona chakiris. As a matter of fact, we do find a b'raisa that says that there are 8 chakiris. So why is our Mishnah saying only 7? And why is the Tanna of our Mishnah saying only 7, which leads us back to say that the 11th word is available, is being used? Yeah, fine. Tanoim are allowed to argue, but what's the basis on which they're arguing? And now the Gemara is going to allude to a whole discussion that's in the Masechta Pesachim, where it discusses this whole concept in great detail. Yeah, here the Gemara just alludes to it briefly. Basically, what it is it discusses over there in Pesachim, you have the discussion, till what time of the day are you allowed to eat chametz, and when do you have to burn chametz? So we all know that we have to stop eating by the end of the fourth hour of the day and burn it by the end of the fifth hour. And then you have a different opinion over there. You have the opinion of Rabbi Huda over there in the Mishnah that says that you're allowed to eat throughout the whole 5 hours. The halacha is not like him. The halacha is that you have to stop at the end of the fourth hour. But what's the vert? So you have the point is also midaraisa. You only have to stop eating chametz and burn it at the end of the sixth hour. So in other words, we're saying that according to we're moving up the deadline for eating and for burning by 1 hour, and according to Rabbi Huda, we're moving up the deadline for eating by 2 hours and for burning by 1 hour. So the question is why? So the Gemara over there in Pesachim gets into a whole discussion between Abaya and Rava how we understand Rabbi Meir's and Rabbi Huda's opinions. In keeping also with our mission over here, which says that we interrogate the Adam about what time of day it was. So there's a few different possibilities that the Gemara brings up over there.
Why do we have to rely on Sachim to argue the hour here?
Because it becomes we have to ask, in other words, what's the maximum amount of time that a person might mistake the hour? The whole point is, in other words, we're saying, why do the Chachamim have to put in a buffer of an hour or 2 hours? Presumably because a person might make a mistake about the time. A person might not realize, a person might think that it's the end of the fourth or fifth hour of the day, when really it's the end of the sixth, and at that point you eat chametz anymore, you have chametz in your possession anymore, you're over on Bal Yoroh or Bal Yomaseh, and you're over on Losecha chametz, etc. So therefore the Chacham had to give a buffer. So the question is, how much can we think that a person is going to mistake the time? So hanicha
indoors or outdoors.
Well, so a person can go outdoors, fine. But hanicha la Abaya libid Rav Meir. So okay, I can understand very well according to Abaya's understanding of Rav Meir in that Gemara over there. Dom einanam toyev haloy klum. He says that according to Rav Meir, a person doesn't make a mistake in the time at all. In other words, a person a person has a pretty good idea of what time it is, pretty close to the minute.
To the minute?
At least very close, in other words, or at least to the few minutes.
What time is it now? To the minute? No.
But the point is, in other words, a person, according to Abaya's understanding of Rameyer over there, he says that evidently Rameyer says that a person can look up at the sun and have a pretty good idea to within a few minutes either side what time it is. And therefore, that's why he says according to the mayor.
Depending on your watch, you kind of start.
We got used to our watches, yeah. But you know, if we lived in those days
and
we were
more the seasons, you can say, but
yeah, you know the
minute,
seasons.
If you're used to telling time by the sun, then you'll get into the habit. And you'll be able to.
At a time when you have roughly 12-hour days, it's not.
This is also true, yeah.
So it is a little bit easier.
This is also true. Yeah.
Depends where you are.
Yeah, but okay. So if you're
in Australia, maybe, but not in England or in.
No, but even there, it's close to the equinox, so the days are pretty close to 12 hours either way.
Yeah. Everywhere in the world, the best you get to having equidistant hours is paper time.
Okay. Again, let's go back to our Mishnah a second. You had like this. The scenario in our Mishnah was we had one eight says that something happened in the second hour of the day, and the other says that it happened in the third hour of the day. So then we said, then we said Eidos and Kayemes. We said the Eidos is fine. We can assume that they both are describing the same thing. On the other hand, if one said it was during the third hour and the other said the fifth hour, Eidos and Bekela, then their Eidos was bottle, but Rabbi Huda said Kayemes, that it's valid. Abaya understands your mayor to be saying, therefore, that a person is not going to make a mistake in the time at all. In other words, when one of them says it was in the second hour, he means at the very end of the hour. Let's say notionally 8:50 is 7:59. And the other one says that it was at the beginning of the third hour. He means notionally 8 o'clock or 8:01. So, at most, there's a difference of 2 minutes between them. So, if you understand it that way very well, then you could understand it would make sense to ask the Adim not just within what hour was it? Was it between 7 and 8, for example? But also ask them within that. Was it closer to 7? Was it closer to 7:30? Fine. And according to another lashon of the two lashonis in the Gemara and Pesachim over there, a second understanding of a second version of what Abaya says over there is the Amar Adam Toya Mashu. He says a person might make a mistake in a small amount of time, let's say a few more minutes, maybe 10 minutes, whatever. Shapir, so all that works because then it makes sense that you could ask the Adim what percentage of the hour had passed. Was it closer to the beginning or the middle or the quarter hour or whatever? Ela la baya libidir b'yehuda, but according to Abaya's understanding of Rabbi Yehuda, dama adam toya chatzi shah, where he understands there that a person might make a mistake by up to half an hour. Because again, Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah is saying that if one of them said in the third hour and the other one said in the fifth hour, it's valid. And Abaya understands over there that, let's say, the thing happened in the middle of the fourth hour. So one of them was a half hour behind and the other one was a half hour ahead.
Right. In the middle of the fourth hour.
In the middle of the fourth hour, yes.
The
so notionally, let's say it was at 3:30. One of them said one of them is off by a half hour and therefore says it was at 3 o'clock. The other one is off by a half hour in the other direction and says 4 o'clock. According to that, there's no sense asking them which part of the hour was it in, because they could anyway end up making a mistake. They could anyway easily be mistaken. Ula Rava, and according to Rava's understanding, Dama To in Shituva, according to Rava's understanding in the Gemara over there, Rava says that people can make even bigger mistakes over there.
Tova means a lot.
Rava says, according to Rav Meir, a person might be off by close to 2 hours, and according to Rabbi Yehuda, a person might be off by close to 3 hours. In other words, for example, again, one of them says it was in the third hour, one of them says it was in the fifth hour, Rabbi Yehuda says that's acceptable, one of them might be saying effectively it was at 3:01, the other saying it was at 5:59, so they're off by close to, one of them is off by close to 3 hours, and we still accept the Eidos, according to Rabbi Yehuda. So again, Ma'ikal Memer. So what would you say? What would be the point of asking them, was it closer to 3 or was it closer to 3:30, when according to Rava, the person might say it was 5 or almost 6, and it would still be valid? So therefore, so the question is, according to those understandings, why would we even think there should be an eighth chakira in the first place to ask what part of the hour was it in? Yeah.
What if they can't remember the hour? Let's say it was a couple of years ago, and then the Beis Din pushed it off or something.
So that's what we said in the Mishnah when we learned the Mishnah yesterday, was that if with any of the chakiras, if the Edom say we don't know, that's it. Case is gone. Because Edus has to be Edus Shati Yochel Hazima. It has to be the possibility of other Edom and coming and saying Imanu Hayisim. If they can't remember what time it was, then there's no possibility of that, because Edom would come and say, you were with us elsewhere at a different time of that day. Fine, but we didn't mean that time. We meant a different time.
What if one says it's sundown, one says it's sunrise?
Ah, so that's what the Mishnah said, that if one of them said it was before Netzachama and the other, then that's it. We toss it out, because we know one of them has to be mistaken.
No, because...
Same thing. If one of them says it was before sunset and after sunset, we'd be the
one
same
idea. One of them was in a tunnel.
Sunset.
No, one says sunset and one says sunrise.
Well, then that's completely different. So even Rava would
work. Because they think, hey.
One of them works at night, one of them.
Nah, a person has to be able to know the difference between day and night.
In those days.
Yeah, especially in those days, yeah. Okay. So the question is, why should we assume that there should be, why should Rav Abahu assume that there should be an eighth chakira if, according to one version of Abaya, and as well, according to Rava, we would say a person can make a mistake by more than that amount anyway? There is, by the way, why should you bother asking them if it was at 3 or at 3:30, when anyway they could mistakenly say it was at 4 or 5, and according to Rabbi Yehuda it would still be acceptable, and even according to the mayor, if they said 4, it would still be acceptable. And mind you, by the way, the Maharshal, and then the Tumim get into a big discussion over here about the question. And what happens, are we talking about, for example, when we say that we can try to reconcile what the Edom are saying, are we talking specifically the case where, for example, one aid says it was during the second hour and one says it was during the third hour, and then you have other Edom and come and say Imanu Hayisim, so we can during the third hour, so we can reinterpret and say, fine, they both meant the second hour, but one made a mistake? Or would it be, Maharshal talks about, what if, for example, both Edom said it was the second hour, other Edom come and say Imanu Hayisim the second hour? Can they say, but, you know, we were allowed a certain amount of mistaken leeway, it was actually the third hour when it took place, and we mistakenly thought it was the second hour? Maharshal says no in that case, because in that case you have no Edom saying the third hour. The Tumim disagree. The Tumim has a long, long discussion disagreeing with Maharshal with Maharshal on that.
How do we plug this a lot today, where time is much more precise than you?
So then it would have the Pashtus, it would be much more precise. I mean, we don't have the Dinin of Pashtus nowadays anyway.
No,
and Dinin Mominus, we learned before that the Chachamim said you don't need all these detailed Drishas or Hakira. When Mashiach comes, I guess very likely these Dinin will be revised to fit the realities of that time, I guess, yeah. Okay. Anyway. No, but we can say that Rabbi Bohu, when he's pointing out that there ought to be an eighth chakira, he can mean that we should be asking what year of the Yovel cycle was it. The question is, Hainu Be'ezer Shavua. That amount, when you ask what number Shmita was in the Yovel it is, that amounts to saying what year in the Yovel it was. No, rather we can say to ask which Yovel was it. Is it the first Yovel cycle after the Yidden entered out Israel, or the second, or the tenth, or what happened? Yeah, the Idach, and what would Rabbi Yehuda answer to that? What does he do with Rabbi Bohu's objection? He would say, fine, Kivin to Amar Be'ezer Shavua, once you say which Shmita was it within the Yovel, Loi Boi Be'ezer Yovel, he would say, you don't have to ask what Yovel it is, because people aren't going to wait from one Yovel to the next. They're not going to wait 50 years to come and say Edom.
Aside from that explanation, why would he not agree to that? Just because of that?
So Rav Abahu
could give this explanation.
No, but
you're not going to wait.
Rav Abahu would say the same way as the next piece of Gemara is going to point out that you need to ask the Edom as many details as possible. He would argue, and he has a braisa to back him up, that nevertheless we want to ask them all possible details, in order to make it more likely that one of them will say any day, and then we can toss out the edges. But Rabbi Yehuda would say that that's going a little, that's going too far. There's no reason to assume that it should be necessary. There is, by the way, a machlokas between the Baal HaMor and many of the other Rishonim about an interesting question. Is all this talking about always that no matter what the Edom come and say, we always have to ask them what part of the Yovel, what year, what month, et cetera, et cetera? Let's say, for example, the Edom to begin with come to Beis Din and say, Yesterday. Yeah, not even yesterday. That's the next piece we're going to talk about in the Gemara. But let's say they say yesterday, which was the the fifth of Elul, Tavshin Ayin Zayin, which is the seventh year of the Yovel cycle, et cetera, et cetera. You know, and they give all those details. Do we still need to ask them according to the Razat? Not. According to, or even if they don't give all the details, if they just volunteer with themselves, they come forward and say, let's say for example, it was on the fifth of Elul. Yeah. Then according to the Razor, according to the Baal Amar, Taki, you don't have to ask them these details because they already said it themselves. According to many of the other Rishonim, you still have to ask them.
They
anyway.
May prearrange those.
That's not a question of prearranging. It's just if the idea is that we said before, and we're going to quote soon that Reb Shimon Elazar, according to Reb Shimon Elazar, that we want to matriach them as much as possible in hopes of distracting them. Yeah. Then maybe the same thing. Yeah.
Dispute their aidas by the contradiction in the Hakasha without asking them to explain?
No, but we would say, in other words, according to the Baal Amar, if you ask them the other details that they didn't provide, what number year in the Yovel cycle was it, what day of the week was it, etc., the various details they didn't provide.
Is that the halacha?
Well, it's a machlokes between Rishonim. There wasn't really a final authority to decide it. The Rambam, I don't think, makes that distinction. He says that you're always asking the seven chakiras. Okay. Fine. We said in the Mishnah of Yossi, I remember that Rabbi Yossi says you don't have seven chakiras, you only have three. You only ask them, instead of asking them all the details of the Chacham did, Rabbi Yossi says you just ask them what day, what time, and what place. So, Tanya, Omer lahem Rabbi Yossi l'chachamim, l'divreichem, he says, according to your logic, if the Edom come to Beis Din and say that Pliny killed Pliny yesterday, what do we need to ask them? What Shemitah in the cycle was it? What year was it? What month? What day of the month? We know those answers. He said yesterday. Amrullah. And even yesterday, Mefarshim answered that Rabbi Yossi might even mean that Emesh might mean, for example, not necessarily yesterday, but even if he means like sometime in the last couple of days. Still, why should he have to ask him what year it was? In the last couple of days, we know it was this year. Amrullah, the Chachamim answer back to Rabbi Yossi, l'dvarecha, fine, according to your logic, mi shebaba am'ach shebhagay, so what happens if the Edom come and say he killed him just now? Amrullah, be'ezi yom be'ezi shal be'ezi makam. According to your own logic, you also agree you have to at least ask them what day, what time, what place. L'chura, in this case, you shouldn't even have to ask that, he says today. Ella, afagav le'tzarech, the answer...
Wait, today is 7 and today is 6.
Fine, they can ask him the time, why should they have to ask him the day? Yeah. Ella, afagav letzarech. Evidently, the idea is, even though you don't need to ask it, raminonale, we still impose on them to answer these questions. Kid Reb Shimon ben Elazar, like what Reb Shimon ben Elazar said in the previous perek, that we move them around from one place to another, or according to the Rambam, we distract them, we go off topic from one topic to another in order to catch them off guard. Hachinami, the same thing over here. Afagav letzarech, even if we don't technically need all these questions, raminonale, we should still impose it on them, kid Reb Shimon ben Elazar. Same idea. Yes, we should still have to ask them to be able to identify,
to
fatigue them and make it more likely they'll contradict each other or say they don't know or whatever.
Nowadays, it should be easier for Edom Zimmerman to do their thing. They could just take virtual reality goggles and then they can make a whole scene and they'll remember it. And it'll look real.
So maybe, but it should
be.
Okay.
Maybe
it's literally goggles. What would Rabbi Yossi answer to that? He would say, Emesh hoger shchiach b'reveidi. It's fine. But for Edom to come and say that he killed him yesterday or a few days ago or whatever is very common. Achshav hoger l'shchiach b'reveidi. It's not necessarily that common that it'll be today. It's not necessarily that Edom rush off to Beis Din the moment they see the thing happen. The day they see the thing happen. So therefore, it's more logical, he says, that if he says today, it's true, it would be, you technically shouldn't need to ask him what day it was, but fine, it's rare enough that that happens, that you still make it a general rule you need to, but not if Emesh holds it. Okay. The halakha is like the Chachamim anyway. Okay. Okay. So then we said, the Mishnah continued, Makira Matamosa, the Mishnah had continued that they asked the Edom, do you recognize him? So the Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa to expand on these questions. The question is, Makira Matamaisa, do you recognize him, in other words, the victim? Nachri Harag Yisrael Harag, is it a goy or a yid he killed? Because if it's a goy, he's not going to be Chayav Misa.
A goy wouldn't be Chayav
Misa. No, if a yid kills a goy, he's not Chayav Misa.
Oh,
yeah, if a yid kills a goy, he's not Chayav Misa. I mean, it's a terrible thing for him to do, and Beis Din should probably do something to him, but they're not going to be Chayav Misa. Another question you have to ask him is his Sreis Simboi. When he said in our Mishnah, did you give him Asra? Fine, they can do something because of Chilul Hashem if necessary, but they can't give him Misa necessarily because of that.
They reprimand him. That was a Chilul Hashem. Don't do it again.
Yeah, I'm sure they do. Okay. When we say his Sreis Simboi, when we say, did you give him Asra, means we ask him, Kibul all of Asra. Did he accept the Asra? Did he say, yes, I know that I'm not supposed to do this? And Hitir Asmi Lemisa. And also we ask him, was he Matir Asmi Lemisa? Did he say, not only, yes, I know I'm not allowed to do this, but he said, I don't care, I'm doing this anyway. I'm doing this knowing that I can be Chayiv Misa by Beis Din. Did he do that? And we also have to ask, hey, Mr. Sech Kedibur. And also, did you do the killing the Sech Kedibur of the Hasra? Because if not, then it might be that he forgot it. Short-term memory loss.
60 seconds?
No, 60 seconds.
Oh, the
Kedibur is the time of Shalom Aleichem Rebbe.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, much less.
That's the point.
Yeah.
The mafia would love this.
Okay. All right. Another example, if the case is that the person is being accused of worshipping Avodah Zarah, they have to ask, which idol did he worship? Did he worship Po'er or did he worship Merkulus? Which Avodah did he do? Is it Buach? Did he sacrifice something? Did he shech something to it? The Kitter? Did he burn it? The Nisuch? Did he pour out a libation? The Ishtachavah? Did he bow to it? Because we'll learn later on in the parak, all those things are also, all those are Chayav Misa, but you have to know what the details were. Okay. Where do we know Minatoda, this concept of Asura? Yeah. It's like this. Shenemo, the Pasuk says, by the Arayas and Kedoshim, the Isha Sheyikach HaSachoytzer, if a man marries or has relations with his sister, Bas Ovev VeBasima, his father's daughter or his mother's daughter, the Ra Esovasa, the Pasuk says, if he sees her Erva. So the question is, what do you mean he sees? Ultimately, Yitali Milsa. Doesn't depend on whether he sees it or not. He's not Chayah for seeing her Erva. He's Chayah for having her. No, but why would you so try to use that expression? It means, it means the Edom have to show him the reason of it. The Edom have to show him, they have to inform him that she is an erva to him. In context, the Pasuk is saying that if he has relations with her, then he'll be Chayiv Kares. But it's not relevant to Kares, because Kares is in the Eivishter's hands. The Eivishter knows whether he knew about it or not. So therefore, if you can't apply it to Kares, there's no Hasra, it's not relevant over there, Tneu Inin Lamalkus, instead apply it to Malkus, which is also Shayach by his sister. Namely, if there are Edim who see him about to do it, and they warn him, and they warn him, if you do this, you're going to be Chayav Malkus, and he Taka does it, then he's Taka Chayav Malkus.
And then he doesn't get Kares.
Then he doesn't get Kares, indeed, but because it's Kohai Vikris and Shalaku, yeah, they're plotted from Kares, indeed. But the point is, we see that applies to Malkus then, and from Malkus we apply it to everything else that you need after all.
How do we know we have to apply to everything else?
Because we have it's a binyan av. The Torah tells us in this one place, and it applies everywhere else. We're going to see soon, actually. We're going to say we have four psukim that teach us this concept of Asra, and we're going to say we need all of them, because each one of them teaches us that it applies in a different case. So far we know by Malkus. Okay.
Edim Zemim means what?
Edim Zemim don't need Asra, we said before. They're the one exception.
Right.
Fine, wait. Okay. Dvei Chizkiyah Tana, in the Yeshiva of Chizkiyah, they taught another limud for this. The Pasuk says, V'chi yodid ish arayehu lahorgir ba'arma. If a person is premeditatedly goes and goes against somebody else and kills him stealthily, so the implication of the word ki yodid is shehistru boi v'adayin humezid. They gave him asra, and he's still amazing. How do we learn that from the word ki yodid? Rashi says two possibilities. Number one, because how would we know whether he's amazing? We have to give him asra. And then we know if he said that, if he accepted the asra, then it means he's amazing. That's one. The other explanation is because otherwise he could have been doing it for shogeg. He didn't know.
Anything should be basra, if you say.
That's the point. You need asra. But the point, anyway, Rashi's second explanation is because the Pasuk could have said imhizid-ish, which would mean in the past tense, instead it's b'chiyozid in the future tense, meaning that he remains in his zodah, and that even after he's born, he's still b'chiyozid, he still goes and does it premeditatively. Yeah. That's number two. Dvei Rabbi Shmuel Tana, and the Yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, they learned the third limud for this. The Pasuk says by the Mekoshesh Eitzim, that the Hamotzim Oisim Mekoshesh Eitzim, the ones who found him Mekoshesh Eitzim, came and brought him to Bethin. On Shabbos, yeah, implying shehistru boy, it means they gave him asra, v'adayin hu mekoshesh, and still he was mekoshesh. Because again, it says the word mekoshesh etim, that he's still gathering wood.
Lashon hove,
yeah.
Otherwise it said mekoshesh etim,
or whatever, that he was mekoshesh etim, Rashi says, that the one who had collected wood, yeah. Dvei Rebbe Tana, and the Yeshiva of Rebbe, they taught a fourth limud for this. The Pasuk says, in this week's parasha, al dvar asher ina, that it's on the mat. This is talking about a case of a man who rapes a naira mayrasa. So the expression is that he's chayv mis al dvar asher ina, because on the matter of that he afflicted her. The word al dvar means al iske jibur. It has, why is he chayv? Because there was speaking involved. Maybe after all, the Edom spoke to him and told him that this is awesome. We need all four of these lamodim. Because if we only had the Torah told it to us by a choisa, the verah, so vasa, have amin a chayv and malchus, ain't chayv and mitzvah law, you would think it only applies by malchus. Maybe again, like the same logic that we said before, a harsher punishment means less rules that apply. A choisa is malchus. The maximum is malchus or karas, yeah. Well, you can be karas, but karas, after all, is not relevant.
That's how it is.
All arayas karas, if there was no Edim Basra. Some of them, the maximum penalty is malchus, like achoisa. Some of them, and there's various ones. Some of them, the maximum penalty is skila, some srefa, some chena. So therefore, kasev achmona v'chi ki yazid. Therefore, the Torah has to tell us about a case of a murderer, to tell us that it applies by Mrs. Mason as well. The kasev achmona v'chi yazid. On the other hand, if the Torah only told it to us there, have amina hanimili sayif, to kill, then you would say, fine, but maybe that concept only applies by hereg, which is one of the more lenient types of Mrs. Mason. As we said before, it's the third according to the Chachamim, the fourth according to the Shimon. Aval skila de chamura emaloi. Maybe it wouldn't apply to skila, which is more stringent. So therefore, we need also the case of the Mekoshish Eitzim and the case of Advar Asher Ina, the case of the Naira Mayrasa, both of which involve Skila.
Skila is worse.
Skila is definitely worse than Hereg. According to Rav Shimon, Skila is number two, Skila is number two, and Chenek is according to him, Skila is number two, and Sayef is number four. According to the Chachamim, it's respectively one and three. So therefore, the Torah tells us two by Skila. The Mekoshish got Skila, and Advar Asher'ina, the guy who rapes the Naira Mayrasa, or for that matter, if it's consensual, same thing, whatever, is also Skila. So the question is, how do you need Skila and Mamali? Fine, why do we need two Pesukim by Skila? The reason is, Lirb Shimon, Lasserina, Serapin. According to Rav Shimon, one of them comes to teach us not only does it apply to Skila, it also applies to Strafer, because again, according to him, Strafer is more stringent than Skila. Lirabonon, what about according to the Rabbanon? Again, it's another one of these examples. Milsid Asiba Kavachimer turned off the cause of Lakara. Again, it's something we could have in principle learned from a Kavachimer, but the Pasuk comes and tells it to us more explicitly by mentioning the word Alzvar.
To keep us in mind.
So the question is, v'lichta v'rachmona b'nis golin, v'leisu hanach v'ligmuru minah, v'milei. Fine, in that case, why do we need all those four psukim? Let the Torah tell it to us in one or two places when it comes to skila, and we'll learn if it applies to skila, how much more so it applies to hereg, and how much more so it applies to malchus, which are more lenient. The answer is hochanami. Here also the same idea. Milsa da'asya b'kavachaymer, torah b'kos of lakra. Again, it's true, we could have learned it by kavachaymer. Nevertheless, though, the pasuk still spells it out for us. So we know more clearly that it also applies to Malchus and it also applies to Herod. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah, Hitter Asmi L'Missa, we asked the Edim, was the guy Matar Asmi L'Missa? Did he say that I know that I'm Chai of Missa for this, but I'm doing it anyway? Menolon, where do we know that from? That he has to accept after all, that was the previous thing, the various Limudim that we had. What about that he has to be Hitter Asmi L'Missa? No, it's not the same thing. He could say, for example, I hear what you're saying, I understand this is author, but not say, I'm matter asmi l'missa, and not say, it makes a difference. He could say, for example, that I hear what you're saying, I understand now that this woman is also to me, or this food is also to me, or what have you, but I'm not doing it. I'm a nass of the punishment. I hear what you're saying, it's author, but nevertheless, I'm not matter asmi l'missa. He has to say that I know that this is osur. I hear what you're saying, and nevertheless, I'm doing this even though I know I'm going to be chayav mrs. Basin for it. It could happen. Obviously, it happened. It happened by the first occasion, for example. Yeah.
He would go ahead and kill the guy, and now he's not chayav mrs. without saying it.
If he doesn't say it, then it's up to the Eibishter to deal
with
it.
It's an inducement not to say it.
Fine, if he doesn't say it, he doesn't say it. The Eibishter will deal with him. The Eibishter will send the snake. The Eibishter will send the snakes or the wild animals or what have you that we said before or that we had the other day to deal with.
I don't know.
So the question is Minolon. Where do we know this concept from? Omar Rava v'itema Chizkiya, Omar Kro Yumat HaMes, the Pasuk says in last week's parasha that the mess shall be killed, implying, Ad Shiyatir Asmi L'Misa, implying HaMes implies that he's already, as if he was dead before he came to Beis Din, because he verbally said that I'm willing to be killed for this.
Well,
yeah, okay.
So you could say it even without that.
But that's how we know it. If it weren't for that Pasuk, we wouldn't know that concept.
No, you could say it in reverse.
No,
because
it says Yumas Hames, and the word Hames, the word Hames implies that he's already like a mess, or the Yad Ramah says the word Hames, the Chalal is extra. So it comes to teach us this concept that it has to be Hitir Asmi L'Mitzah. He has to verbally say, I'm doing this knowing that I'm Chayiv Mitzah. Okay. We'll continue tomorrow with a case that comes out from this.
Okay.